What's up, podcast friends? I'm happy to share that we've teamed up with Dormco to make your dorm decorating a lot easier. Why Dormco? They offer quality and durability, affordability, and a wide selection for bedding to storage solutions and everything in between for your dorm room. So if you or anyone you know is looking to decorate your dorm, see the affiliate partnership link in the show notes for Dormco, your one stop for stylish, affordable, and quality dorm essentials. Please note that if you make a purchase through any of our affiliate links, the podcast gets a commission, but rest assured that we would only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit our listeners. Thank you all and best wishes. Welcome to the CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Grace Vail, who's an admissions counselor at the College of Charleston. Grace, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, John. I'm excited to talk about College of Charleston.
I'm excited as well. It's a true pleasure and honor to have you here. So, Grace, can you provide us with an overview of what the College of Charleston offers the students in terms of academic opportunities and what sets it apart from other colleges?
Absolutely. So I know this both on the student side and on the admissions process side. I graduated from the College of Charleston in 2018. I was a Northerner who went south for school, which is a very common path these days. And what drew me to the college and what continues to draw people to the college is that medium-sized university. We are a public research university. It feels like a small private school. The 13th oldest institution in the United States, and it feels like you stepped into a storybook. So it has all the modern parts and it has all the historic parts. I really liked the fact that there's a balance between the modern and the history. You could do anything from international business and study abroad to historic preservation and go into those old buildings and learn about how Charleston was built all those hundreds of years ago.
Well, that's a great overview. You graduated yourself in 2018, so obviously they're lucky to have you, as are we, on this podcast. It's a medium-sized school, a public research university, and it sounds like you have so much to offer in terms of your programs. I know that communications, business, psychology, and bio are just a few, and there's plenty more, which, of course, by the way, I always link the Office of Admissions in the show notes. If there's anything else that you want to link, just send it to me, and of course, we'll make it available to the parents and their students. So, Grace, can you tell us about the student life experience at the College of Charleston since you were a student there, again, graduating in 2018, and what kinds of extracurricular activities and organizations are available to the students?
Sure. So, student life, I like to joke that our students are busy. We have over 240 clubs and organizations. That's everything from club sports to match all of our D1 sports to the Taylor Swift Club and Ultimate Frisbee. You will find your people. If you don't find your people your first semester, you continue to go out and you meet different groups of people. Like I said, 10,000 students, you will find a couple different groups of friends, and that's what you're supposed to do when you go to college. But we are very big fans of supporting our Cougars. That's our mascot. At our Division I basketball games, we won our CAA championship last year.
Nice.
So those are very well attended. We like to be outside and we like to take advantage of what the city has to offer as well. When there's so many different service opportunities, internship opportunities, both on and off campus jobs, there's usually some sort of intertwined relationship for a student when they live in Charleston and go to CFC.
D1 sports, Taylor Swift Club, internship opportunities, study exactly. abroad opportunities. It really sounds like you have something for everyone. That's awesome. So, Grace, let's get to the application process itself. What is the College of Charleston's approach to the admissions process, particularly in terms of the criteria and factors considered when reviewing applications?
Yeah, absolutely. So we pride ourselves in taking a holistic review process. To support this, our decisions are based on a couple of things. So we never have a GPA cutoff. We don't look and say, oh, we have enough people from Massachusetts applying. We're going to put them to the no pile. We mostly look at high school coursework. So if you're taking rigorous classes, we'd like to see some AP, dual enrollment, honors, Your GPA is very important. That's also very important when it comes to scholarships. We do weight GPAs, so that's something to keep in mind when students look and say, oh, this is what I have to offer. Keep in mind that that is weighted in our process. We are test score optional, but if you do decide to offer those to us, we will consider them. And they are a baseline metric, but sometimes they are pretty good into understanding how a student can think. And we do look at class rank when that is offered, but a lot of schools are just not giving us class rank anymore. So we're kind of moving away from that. But I myself, as an English major, really like to look at the essays. That's something that really tells me a lot about a student and can give me that overall view of, would this student do well here? Would they thrive at College of Charleston?
So you gave us a lot of information there. Let's unpackage it a little bit. You talked about the fact that there's no GPA cutoff. There's no state cutoff. You mentioned Massachusetts. In other words, you wouldn't say, oh, we reached a certain amount, so we're not going to accept any more from that state. So again, unpackaging it further, can you share the percentage of students that apply from out of state? And does the application process in any way differ based on your in-state or out-of-state status?
Sure. So we are currently at a 50-50 split for in-state and out-of-state students that make up the population of our school. Now, that's a lot. We are a state school. We are a public state school for South Carolina. If you look at, USC is kind of catching up to us, but if you look at the University of South Carolina, they are mostly in-state students. So that is something that's very unique about our school. It is nice because we are diverse and you will meet people from all over the United States. The only difference in the admissions requirements between in-state and out-of-state is that there are a lot of different ways that people are graded when they're in South Carolina. Their education system is different than, say, New York or Connecticut. So when it comes to awarding scholarships, obviously as a state school, it is a lot less expensive to go to an in-state school as a South Carolina student. So that's really the only difference between those two. We have plenty of Northerners, we have plenty of Westerners, and we are just continuing to grow.
Well, that's fantastic. 50 in-state, 50% out-of-state. So obviously on the weekends, there must be a lot of people on campus and certainly something to do for everyone. So let's dig a little further. I'm curious because the overall number of applications schools are receiving are on the rise. With an increase in applications, Grace, how do you determine how many students to accept, waitlist, or even deny when you don't necessarily know how many of the student applicants that you accept are actually going to attend?
Sure. So one thing that I'm really lucky about is that I'm not the person to decide that. And I have to tell you, I'm very glad because the way that those metrics, who to accept, who to waitlist, who to deny, is a guessing game. So it's projected. It's based on last year's numbers. It's based on 2 years ago. It's based on before pandemic, right? So that threw a wrench in everybody's lives plus admissions. College admissions are very different and they will always be different since COVID. But again, what they do is they guess. So they say, we're going to offer admission to this many students from all these different states and we expect this many in-state students to come to us. And it can be more and it can be less. You can be under-enrolled or you can be over-enrolled. Now, we have a lot of students coming this fall, so we kind of undershot it when we said how many students we thought would accept. Now, that's a great problem to have, right? Some schools across the United States are having trouble. They don't have wait lists. They're still accepting students because they need to fill their incoming class. We're very lucky that we don't have that problem. Going along with that, we accept a certain amount of students. We look at kind of where our numbers are, and then that's when we take people off the wait list.
So speaking of the incoming class and what they look like, what can you tell us about the average profile in terms of GPA, SAT or ACT scores, and anything else that you could share regarding your mid 50%?
Absolutely. So our mid 50% is most students. So this is students who do choose to report SAT and ACT, right? So that's something to keep in mind. These scores are going to be a little bit higher than the national average because students who are maybe on the borderline realize that their test score optional. They don't have to give us their scores. So our typical student who reports scores is between an 1170 and a 1310. someone who applies to our Honors College, which is a different kind of part of the College of Charleston, there's extra opportunities within there, those scores are going to be higher. They're going to be more 1290 to 1400. The equivalency for ACT is 25 to 30. And for non-residents, it's going to be about a 3.8 to a 4.2 weighted. So I like to say the overarching mix of A's and B's and a strong test score is what we look for in general.
Understood. And I appreciate that you talked about the fact that the mid 50% is higher, of course, because of the test optional nature. You also mentioned your Honors College. So I was curious, is that a separate application or are students invited to apply to the Honors College based on their initial application?
So that is part of our College of Charleston application, and that's whether you do it through our website or the Common App. I tell all students to do Common App. There's no reason not to. It's a lot easier. They read exactly the same. When I get your application, I can't see a difference between whether you applied on our website or not. So some schools, it is not like that. So that's something to keep in mind. But it is just an extra essay on our application. This year, the prompt is pick an identifier and tell us why you're a thinker or a creator. That essay will then be reviewed within the context of your application by Honors College specific admissions counselors. And then you can be invited for interviews, you can be accepted, you can be waitlisted, but it is a smaller community within the College of Charleston as a whole with extra opportunities as well.
Understood. So it's part of the common application or your own application if students choose to use the College of Charleston application, and basically it's an extra essay. Is there a GPA cutoff though?
There is not a GPA cutoff.
Okay.
However, typically people who are accepted into the Honors College have at least a 4.0.
Understood. And what are some of the benefits, since we're talking about your Honors College, what would you say are some of the benefits of being a part of that?
Sure. So I like to say it's everything that College of Charleston does have, but in one small centralized place. So there are a lot of mentorship opportunities. You'll have an advisor for your major. You'll have an advisor for the Honors College specifically. You will have a peer advisor, someone who's a junior or senior who has been living that College of Charleston Honors life for quite some time, who can be a resource, more on the same page, not just an adult who is advising you on your future careers and your pathways, but there are programs, internships, job shadowing, extra study abroad opportunities. One big thing is scholarships. There are tiered scholarships and named scholarships. And especially for students coming out of state, if a student has been really strong in high school and they say they want to go into the Honors College, it's a really great way for them to offset that cost, but then also get that individualized relationship with some professors, with more study abroad opportunities, doing something called Honors Immersed, which is where their junior year, they say, what are you going to do? You got to do something. Are you going to go to France? Are you going to be a teaching assistant? Are you going to get an internship at a law firm? And it's very, very centralized to the college as well.
I was also curious, Grace, what are your different ways in terms of how to apply? In other words, early action, rolling, ED, and sure. What do you recommend in terms of how early students should apply so that they're, you know, going to be considered for all of the different scholarships that you have at Charleston?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. And it definitely varies per person. I have some people who email me and say they want to do early decision. And I say, we're going to have to talk about that. And the reason why is because early decision is our first deadline. That is a binding agreement. You sign a piece of paper with your guidance counselor and your parents saying, I understand exactly what I'm getting myself into. I want to go to College of Charleston. I don't care if I get into Harvard. I don't care if I get into UC Davis. I'm going to College of Charleston if I am accepted. Now, that deadline is November 1st, and you just need to have all of your materials in by November 1st. If you are accepted, then you withdraw your applications to all the other schools, and you must deposit by January 5th. Now, for some people, they say, College of Charleston is the only place I want to be. And I say, come on down to Cougar Town. And they apply early decision. If they're not sure, if they say, well, I'm weighing my options, I have a reach school that I want to see if I can get into, then we say, okay, early action. There's no reason not to apply early action. I recommend that every student apply early action because it makes my workload easier in the spring and they get priority consideration for some scholarships. They get to know their decision by December 15th. So if they want to kind of know where they're going and what they want to do for the rest of the year, it's kind of easier on their senior year to not be waiting until mid-March to find out their decision. And the other decision deadline is January 15th, which is our regular notification deadline. Now, like I just mentioned, students aren't notified until March 1st, and that's also when FAFSA and those need-based scholarships start to come out as well. So that period of time is really when people start making their decisions, they start to weigh their options, and I like to encourage students to have our information earlier than that so they have more time to kind of think it over, because it is 4 years of your life. It's okay to transfer, but it's better to get into one place. And it's only better to have that information right in front of you.
Well, we appreciate that overview. I'm going to just review some of the parts. You said that early decision, obviously it's binding. The application is due by November 1st. I like what you said though, if accepted, early decision, very important to withdraw your application from other institutions, because that might be the difference of another student getting a seat where they'd like to attend or not. So great advice, early action. Obviously that's what you recommend. I recommend it as well. In fact, the summer between junior and senior year, that summer is a time to really tweak your essays, your application and everything. Get it in early action to whatever schools you're applying to. And getting it done early means that you can now enjoy your senior year, hopefully. And as Grace said, you're going to receive your decisions earlier. So that's terrific. Grace, I was also curious, what are some of the things that students do to demonstrate their interest in attending the College of Charleston? And does it come up into play at any point in your overall application review process?
Sure. So demonstrated interest is a really great way to show that you have College of Charleston at the top of your list. We don't technically track demonstrated interest in terms of a point system like some other private schools do, but we can see if a student has come to campus for a tour, for an information session, if they've had what's called a sit down or informal interview. And we do take those things into account when we review the application. I like to call those little extra things that make your application more readable. It makes it more exciting. It's not required. You could never have contacted the school or visited the school, and we will still seriously consider your application. But especially for students who are maybe academically on the cusp of what we look for, those extra things can tell us, hey, they want to come here. They are maybe more apt to get involved. They know what they want. And that is personally something that I really look at quite closely.
Understood. So you don't track it as part of an actual point system in your overall application, but I agree with you. Do it. It cannot hurt you. It can only help. First of all, it helps you with your research about the institution. Mm-hmm. But secondly, as Grace said, it's something that she notices. And so if she's on the fence with a particular student, perhaps if you did the interview, you did the visit, you visited a second time, who knows, that might just be the difference in someone's overall application. Now, Grace, you mentioned interviews. So I was just curious, is that something that is evaluative or just informative when, you know, you're meeting with a student? And do you recommend that a student come in for an interview?
So I recommend students to introduce themselves to your admissions counselor, full stop, whether that's an email, whether that's setting up a Zoom, or, you know, when I go to Boston and I sit down with students, either way, I always recommend it. Now, they are less evaluative in terms of using that informal interview to supplement the application as some other schools, like maybe say Cornell, where you have to have an interview if you want to be considered for admission. But it is, like you said, informative. So if I can understand a student, how they grew up, what they're interested in studying, maybe why they got a C in AP statistics, the more information I can get about a student, the more I have in my arsenal to advocate for that student if it goes before committee and we're maybe on the fence about that student. Right. So it can only help that I know as much about you, the student, as possible.
Well, that's great advice. So definitely reach out, whether it's in an email, if there's a visit at your high school or a local college fair, introduce yourself, students. Definitely you want to make yourself known to the admissions rep. As Grace just explained, you never know if they're on the fence. That might make the difference. So we appreciate that insight. Also, Grace, when reviewing applications from various high schools, you know, you mentioned that 50% of the students are coming from in-state, 50% from out-of-state. So you could imagine the thousands of high schools that you're getting applications from. How do you take into account when one student school offers, for example, 20 advanced placement courses, while someone else's high school may only offer up to 5?
Sure. I really love this question because it relates to one of the parts of admissions I am most intrigued by. We know your school. I know what school. You are not the first application I've ever read from your school. We know the grading scale. We know the weighting. We know if it's an inflated grading scale and if we have to send it for a recalc. We know how difficult those courses are. A college, quote unquote, college placement course at one school would be very different than a college placement course at another school. And we do our very best and a pretty good job at making it a level playing field for when we review grades, GPAs, looking at that rigor. A 90 in an AP on one transcript really doesn't mean anything because in the past, every kid has gotten a 90 in that AP. So we follow those trends. We have notes to ourselves and our processing equipment. And we're pretty good at making it all kind of even out.
Well, I know you're really good at evening it all out. And it leads me to a curious follow-up question. The GPA on the transcript, do you take it as indicated by the high school or do you recalculate since you're getting applications from so many schools?
Sure. So if we know that a school keeps it on a weighted GPA scale, so 4.0 scale, weighted goes up to 5.3. That's kind of our cutoff. If a school awards up to, say, a 5.5, we say that's an inflated grading scale, and we will send it for a recalc. If a GPA is listed and it's maybe kind of not making sense, right? So you can look at the mix of A's and B's or some B's and C's, and you can say, I know what that translates to. That doesn't translate to a 2.5. We look and we say that's unweighted and we add 0.4 to weight that GPA to make it even.
Understood. Well, we appreciate that insight. Again, you know, with pulling the curtain back, we want to get a little bit of inside scoop in terms of how it's looked. And it's really what you said before. You know the many different high schools. You know their scales. You know how they weight or not. And I appreciate you sharing, you know, how you look at that GPA and the transcript. So can you explain, Grace, what opportunities does the College of Charleston offer students that may have had an IEP while in high school in terms of helping to ensure that they continue to be successful once they're on your campus?
Sure. So we're lucky that the College of Charleston is really well known for their disability services. We try to support our students as best we can. We call this area the Center for Disability Services, or SNAP. Now that stands for students needing additional parity or just needing extra help. We have accommodations like extra test time, alternative testing sites, and accessible housing and technology for people who learn differently. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that people can process information. There's a lot of learning differences out there. We don't call them disabilities really because they're just differences. Not everyone's brain really works the same way, and we're pretty good about recognizing that. And when it comes to an IEP or a 504 plan, we will work with students the summer before they matriculate in the fall, and they will most likely let those transfer over to College of Charleston. It's nice because they meet with a student and they say, what does this look like for you? What are some things you have difficulty with? And we work to translate that over to college life.
Well, we appreciate that. And as I said earlier, if there are any links that you want to share with students and their parents, for me to put them in the show notes, just send them to me. And of course, we'll make them available. So, Grace, what about students who intend to play sports at the College of Charleston? How does the process differ for them? And what advice would you share with them in terms of their overall recruitment?
Sure. So I'll be honest, student athletes are different recruits. They are very different than what I do when I go on the road and I talk to students. If a student is serious about playing college level athletics at a Division I school, they need to be either recruited or talking to a coach by the end of their junior year. Now, some people say, I really, really like soccer and I want to continue to play soccer. We say that's great. But in reality, you may be more apt to be on the club soccer team. Now, there's nothing wrong with that because student athletes are students first, but they're athletes close second. So if you're okay with doing two-day workouts and constantly being on the road, then that's a personal choice. Something that I do like students to keep in mind is you can be the best soccer player in your school, you can be the best soccer player in your district, but really 1% or less of students who play a sport in high school end up going on to be Division I athletes. Now, that is a very small statistic, and it's kind of hard to hear, but it kind of puts things into perspective that sports should always be a part of your life, but they may not be the only thing at the forefront when you go to college.
Well, that's great advice. We appreciate that. And of course, very important for the student athletes to go to the NCAA homepage and follow the rules, which of course change from time to time. So it's very important to be up to date on that as well. So this has been a phenomenal conversation, Grace, but I was curious, is there a question I didn't ask today or a topic that I didn't bring up that you'd like to share with us now?
I want to touch on what you said before about withdrawing applications.
Sure.
A trend that we've seen is students aren't just applying to their top five anymore. Students are applying to 10, 15, 20 schools. I think that that's a great thing to do if you have the money for the application fees. But I think that students are becoming more aware that there are a lot of different institutions that can fit them. And I think that that's something that's really important to notice is that there may not just be one school for you. College of Charleston may not be the be all end all. You may decide that you want to go to Boston College, and that's totally fine. And that's something that students should keep in mind is that a couple institutions can be the best fit for them.
Well, that's great advice. And again, this has been a phenomenal conversation. We really appreciate it. And unfortunately, Grace, it does lead us to the last question, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice you would provide a student and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
Absolutely. So my number one piece of advice is to visit schools. Even if you fly to those 25 schools, you need to visit every single one of them. Start with a tiny school with 1,000 kids. Start with a larger school. Visit a medium-sized school, hint, hint, College of Charleston. Look at the whole school, not just what major you're interested in. It's very common for people to change their major once they get to college. So some students say, I'm not going to apply to this school if they don't have nursing. You got to keep your options open. Maybe you want to end up going into public health or you want to go to PA school. These are some things to keep in mind. So get an idea of how flexible a school is if you need to change your mind or take a gap year or something like that. What to expect from your environment at an institution is the best way to figure out your best fit. Another thing I like to say, this is a joke I have with some high school counselors because high school counselors are on the other end and they get just as much pressure as I'd say college admissions counselors do. There are no emergencies in the college admissions process. It can be very stressful and it can feel like the end of the world. There are lots of tears. I have had many teary phone calls, but I advise all students to realize this is meant to be a really positive, good trajectory in your life. If you are worried about making the wrong choice or you are outright rejected from your number one school, you can always transfer. You are not stuck in one place for the rest of your life. A semester is only 3 months and it can go by really quickly. So I hope students know that there is flexibility and it's never the end of the world. And I would be remiss if I didn't say my last absolute piece of advice, underline, underline, is to spell check your essays. We can tell if you wrote it in your third period gym class. We can tell if you copy and pasted it from an AI generator. We really want students to tell us as much about themselves, but to just show that extra bit of caring that you ran it through Grammarly and let the English major on the other side of the platform know that you cared a little bit more.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a phenomenal conversation. You're awesome. The College of Charleston is obviously very lucky to have you, as were we. I am so happy, Grace, as I know that this conversation is going to help so many students and their parents as they navigate through the college admissions process. So there's one last thing to say, Grace. Go Cougars!
Go Cougars!
Thank you so much, Grace, and good luck to everyone with your college searches out there. Take care.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP. I want to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the CEO and founder of Prep Expert. Sean, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, John. Just wanted to do a quick shout out for an amazing deal that we have for College Admissions Process podcast listeners. We're offering 30% off all Prep Expert SAT and ACT courses and tutoring. It's live online. We've got the best score improvement guarantees in the industry. You'll get taught by 99th percentile instructors. And you can save 30% off when you go to the show notes of the College Admissions Process podcast. Grab your discount code for 30% off and click the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Sean. So great to have you again. And to everyone out there, please note that if you make a purchase through any of our affiliate links, the podcast gets a commission. But rest assured that we would only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit our listeners. Thank you all, and best wishes.